Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, Sideline Junkies proudly present to you the Tuesday Night Flight, starring none other than myself and Matt. It's us.
Two-man show.
Oh, man. We got Matt sitting in for the fellas tonight, and it's good that he is because he got a lot to talk about, and I'm intrigued to hear it. But first and foremost, most importantly, how you feeling tonight, Matt?
We are doing well for this Tuesday night. How about you?
Good. Look, I'm gonna go ahead and put it out there now. We're gonna cover, you know, Championship Sunday. When we get to that hockey talk, I got so many questions. So please bear with me.
We will.
That's all I'm gonna say.
Be ready for them.
All right. First and foremost, as you see scrolling at the bottom of the screen, for your sippers, your drinkers, if you smoke a good stick, need something to sip with it, www.buyfortmose.com. That's buyfortmose.com/discount/maniacs. Get your $10 off. You purchase more than $130, you get free shipping. So be sure to check them out. You'll love it. Trust me. Now, I don't think anybody was happy with the outcome of this weekend. I mean, unless you're a Chiefs fan or a Niners fan. So the battle for the Lamar Hunt Trophy. Jeez. Chiefs 17, Ravens 10. Over-under was 44.5. Ravens were 4.5-point favorites. Matt, what was your thoughts on this game?
Well, it seemed another case of the Ravens doing it to themselves, and you know, we hadn't seen that for a while until this game. I honestly didn't like their game plan. I don't know how, when you have one of the a great rushing attack, you don't run the ball really at all. They never try to get the running game going, and I think the run game is what helps Lamar. And you don't, you know, you just, it just was a baffling decision not to run the ball. Then you throw in the stupid mistakes they made, the turnovers, and all of it equaled what ended up happening.
You talk about turnovers. It's just like nothing went right for the Ravens this game. As much as you want to say, oh, the Chiefs played a really good game. No, the Chiefs let them hang around. Nothing went right for the Ravens this game. I will say that. Let me pull up some stats here. Where my stats at? Pat Mahomes, 30 of 39, 241 and a touchdown. Lamar Jackson, 20 of 37, 272, a touchdown and a pick. He also had 8 carries, 54 yards. Pacheco, 24 carries, 68 yards and a touchdown. Kelce, 11 catches, 116 yards and a touchdown. And that was on 11 targets.
Right.
Zay Flowers, 5 catches, 115 yards and a touchdown. I'm going to ask a question. Pacheco has to be one of the best running backs in the league right now. In just a short amount of time, just the way he runs and how effective he is.
Agree. I mean, the problem, I think, with Andy Reid has always been you don't know, you never knew who was going to get the ball, you know, because he's always had the habit of spreading out the carries, and from game to game, you wouldn't know. It kind of like similar to like Bill Belichick in New England. You never would trust in fantasy. You'd never trust a Kansas City running back, and you would never trust a New England running back. I think Pacheco might be changing that because he's shown you give him the rock, and he can do good things with it. And Reed's done it.
I mean, the dude falls forward and gets 7 yards, guaranteed. Falls forward 7 yards, easy. Let's address the elephant in the room. Everybody wanted, well, a lot of people wanted Kansas City to lose because tired of the flashes of Taylor Swift. Every time Travis Kelce does something, Kansas City scores. People getting tired of it. Now, it's come down to the point where people are taking it the wrong way. Oh, y'all just don't like Taylor Swift. I have nothing wrong with Taylor Swift. I just don't feel that if she's at the game, the camera shouldn't be on her all the time. She's there to watch a game. She's not performing. I don't have a problem with her. I don't know her personally, but I don't have a problem with her. She's okay. I mean, only my biggest problem with Taylor Swift is she hasn't apologized for remaking September by Earth, Wind & Fire. And that remake
that's a valid complaint, I think. Yeah, that's okay.
Terrible. I got a problem with Beyonce too. She remade Before I Let Go. Why? It's certain things you just don't touch.
Don't touch.
Leave it alone.
Well, leave it alone. They're coming back out with Roadhouse again. You don't touch Roadhouse. That's Patrick Swayze. That's it.
When I seen that, I said, no, I will not watch that. It's never going to live up to the original.
Nope.
So for those that are Swifties that feel that everybody's hating on her, no, I understand she generated $330 million for the Kansas City Chiefs and the NFL. How, I don't know. But the NFL is going to plaster her face over everything if it means more money.
Absolutely.
And you got to strike while the iron's hot. You're here to make money. But nobody has a problem with her. I just don't want to see her every time something happens. I don't need to see her reaction for a touchdown, a first down. I don't need to see that. I don't. I'm okay. Let me see what she does at halftime. And, you know, tell me what she ordered. That's how I judge. I can judge Taylor Swift. Let me see what she ordered from the concession stand at halftime. And that's how we judge her.
Yeah.
Next,
I go both ways.
Oh, go ahead.
I get the football side of it, but I think, like you said, that the key is the NFL, right? They found a way to tap into a new fan base that maybe never watched the game before. So if the only way to get them maybe to stay into the game until they get hooked on the game is by them showing Taylor Swift's reaction every time, I kind of get it. Like you've tapped into this audience that you've never thought you could tap into before. And you got, like you said, you're striking while the iron's hot. So you're going to take full advantage of that, you know. So I get it from the NFL side. Maybe it'd be nice if maybe they just did occasionally show her, not every single time he catches the ball. You know, that would be, I think, a good mix that hopefully they'll maybe get into at one point in time. Or it won't be a story next year because it won't be new by the time we get to next year.
Agree with that. I agree. Another game that had America in its clutches. Niners 34, Detroit Lions 31. For I think maybe the last month and a half or so, I think the Detroit Lions became America's team because it was hard to root against
100%.
Let me get your thoughts on this game before I even touch any stats. Let me get your thoughts on this game.
So I had beer league that night, so I had to go ref. So when I left, it was at halftime. It was 24-7, and you know, I'm checking the score in between the first game. I think they were still up, and then we got done with game two, and I saw the final score, and my first reaction was WTF, like how did this even happen? So then, you know, I went back home and I actually watched it to see what happened. And you know, look, I get the love of Dan Campbell, right? And he's kind of got that, you know, it used to be, was it Riverboat Ron when he was with Carolina, of always going for it, you know? So if you're going to live with that, I guess you have to die by that too. But I just think, especially the first time he goes for a fourth down, like the Niners only went down and got a field goal. A field goal puts you back up three scores. You don't need to beat their score. You just have to keep matching their score the rest of the game. He doesn't, you know, he goes for it. They don't get it. And the momentum completely changed from that point in time forward. I just think that was the wrong time to do that. Like, you got to play your odds there and take the three and go back up 17.
I agree. And that was a lot that was coming out of that game. Oh, why would Dan Campbell go for it? But they've been doing that all season. It was the not going away from what you've been doing, what got you there. But I had a cousin. He used to have this saying, what gets you there doesn't keep you there. So, and I think that was true here. Yeah, that got you there, but it wasn't going to keep you there.
Right.
And I really wanted Detroit to win this game. I mean, the over-under was 51.5. What did we get? We got 65. So we got the over. Niners were 7.5-point favorites. shoot, both games. I think we all lost on both games. We wouldn't have won no money. Jared Goff, 25 of 41, 273, and a touchdown. Brock Purdy, 20 of 31, 267, and a touchdown and a pick. Montgomery, 15 carries, 93 yards. McCaffrey, they kind of sort of held him in check a little bit. 20 carries, 90 yards, and two touchdowns. Laporta, 9 catches, 97 yards, and Deebo Samuel, 8 catches, 89 yards. I'm going to say this. It may be kind of late, but that pass that went down the middle that bounced off the defender's helmet, and Ayuk dived and caught it,
right?
I think that sealed it right there. That took any win they had, I think that took everything from them.
Yep. Hey, you got to play.
How do you like, not like, pick that ball?
I don't know. There's a couple different plays like that, you know, and I think they got away from the run game too the second half. I mean, the first half they were running the ball all over the Niners between, you know, both Gibbs and Montgomery. They were chunking plays, you know, 5, 7, 8, 10 yards, and it seemed like they kind of got away from that a bit in the second half too, which you thought you'd be more run heavy. But I think they'll look back on this one with a lot of regret, because it's definitely a game that they could have won. And, you know, yeah, they're a younger team, and I think they can only get better, because I think, you know, they'll probably make some moves this year to get that defense to be a little bit stronger. But, you know, you just never know how many chances you're going to get. And I hope they get more for the city. But, man, that was one that that's going to hurt for a while, I think, how they lost that game.
I agree. And the thing is, the report came out through the Midnight Rider. Let me go ahead and give him his props now, because if I don't, he's going to be like, well, I said it first. I know you said it first. Then Tom Pelissero said it, but Ben Johnson is staying in Detroit. So it looks like they're going to try to bring the band back together and run it back, which I think is good. But I just hope they don't have a hangover from it. And then, you know, what were they? A total record of 14-6 this year. So what was that 13-5, 12-5?
Right.
Yeah, 12-5. So hopefully they come back next year and they get right back to this spot and say, okay, we've been here before. Let's get over the hump, no matter who it's against. So I hope they can come back next year and do it. But they'll bring the band back together. And I think that one of the best videos that came out of that game was Dan Campbell leaving the stadium, and he had his arm around Teddy Bridgewater, who's retiring after that game.
Right.
I just said, not saying Teddy Bridgewater was a Hall of Famer or, you know, anything like that, but I love to see players ride off into the sunset when the career is over. The highest point you can ride off at is after a Super Bowl win. And I feel that every great player, if they can, they deserve to go out like that.
Yeah.
That last game, Super Bowl, you left everything out there.
Not many can do that. It's hard. You know, because, well, only one team's going to win it, obviously. And then there's just that they get that itch to come back and play, too, and try to go one more time. And, you know, well, you know, we'll see what happens with even Andy Reid after this year, that the rumors are starting to come out that if they win, that he could maybe retire. You know, on the coaching side of it too. I mean, which I get. I mean, what else is Andy Reid going to have to prove, you know, if he wins another one? He doesn't have, you know, unless he wants to try to go to get to Belichick level, which with Kansas City and Mahomes, I mean, he could. Can't see any reason why. There's nothing that says to me that Kansas City is going to fall off the face of the earth after this year.
That's true. That is true. And I think I was going to ask that question. Do you think Reid is in striking distance? Well, let me rephrase that. Do you think Reid is in striking distance legacy-wise of a Belichick?
If he stays in Kansas City with Mahomes, I would say yes. I mean, Mahomes is a young quarterback, and look, I have my hatred for Kansas City, and you know, there's a lot of talk about the calls in that game, but most of the calls I saw, Baltimore deserved what got called on him. You know, I don't think it was a Kansas City favoritism. Unfortunately, I'd love to say it was, but realistically, I don't think it was. But yeah, I think he definitely could get to that level. I don't see any reason why he couldn't, if as long as those two stay together. Yeah.
Right. And I guess this would be an off-season topic. One day, I think we got to put down the the coaching list of all time. How what's the hierarchy? You know, who's king of the mountain? Then everybody else that falls, you know, down the mountainside. Because it's, I think everybody's gonna have a different list, but I think that would be a pretty daggone good list, though.
Would be a fun one, for sure.
I mean, Joe Gibbs got to be at the top, so.
Might be a little biased there, but yeah, I can accept that.
Just a little bit.
Then I'll say Madden then, just for my old Raiders sidekick. But
yeah. See, and look, I'm one that's not gonna argue with that, so I you got no argument from me. Numbers don't lie. First, congratulations to the Niners and the Chiefs. We'll do Super Bowl predictions the morning of the Super Bowl. So we're not gonna do any predictions. We got NHL to talk about. And let me I gotta pull everything up here. Let me see what we got. First off, you say you got a hot Edmonton team.
Yeah, 16 games in a row, hot.
Mm.
So all they're right. That team has been so crazy this year. But before I get into hockey, I got to give a little shout. So remember, the first time I was on with you guys, I wore my Hartford Whaler jersey, which was a little shout out to Scott Rivette because he's from that area. And, of course, you know, I root for the Carolina Hurricanes. So there's a little – it was a little fun, little dig for fun. But tonight I'm going with my – this is a team that I used to play for way back in Ashburn, Virginia, the Puck Slugs. And this is a shout out to Jeff Nail, who sometimes comments on us, but he also played on this team and he just won back to back in our fantasy league and has now won 5 out of the last 10 years. So he's kind of like his own Bill Belichick. So I just got to explain why I'm wearing this weird Puck Slug jersey tonight too, before we get into NHL. So shout out to Jeff for that, because he didn't know I was doing that, but just for a little bit of fun. So yeah, so Edmonton starts off the year 3-9-1. And a lot of people had Edmonton to be the favorite. You know, they start off slow. They're scoring their usual 3 to 4 goals a game, but their defense was just awful to start the year. They fire the coach. They bring in a guy named Chris Knobloch, not Chuck Knobloch. So no, I don't know if they're related or not. But and then they also brought in Paul Coffey, who that name might ring a bell. One of the great defensive players in Edmonton and Pittsburgh and all time. They change a little tweak here and there. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, they're still getting their 3 to 4 goals a game, but they go from giving up 4 goals a game to now they're only giving up 2 goals a game. Their young goaltender, Stuart Skinner, who was struggling a little bit at the beginning of the year, now all of a sudden, you know, is rocking and rolling with the 95% save percentage. And next thing you know, they've gone from 3-9-1. They're on a 16 game winning streak and they are now 29-15-1. So if you do the math, since the coaching change, they are 26-6-1. So they have just been on fire. And I think a lot of leagues, you know, you talk about 16 game winning streak in any league. I think it's crazy to anytime you get to a streak in double digits. I think in the NHL, it's even tougher because you can be firing on all cylinders. It all takes is one night is to face that hot goalie who just is standing, you know, is a brick wall, and that streak is over, and they haven't hit that for 16 games. It's just, it's an amazing run that they're on right now.
Now, you talk about, I'm a big fan of goalie play, always have been. You know, when everybody says, oh, their favorite player is, you know, Gordie Howe and Gretzky and even Ovechkin. For me, it's always going to be the goalie. So give me your top goalie in the league right now.
Well, it's Aiden Hill in Vegas. And now he's the one that came kind of out of nowhere. He's kind of like a journeyman, then got hot with Vegas last year, won the cup with them. And he's injured here and there a little bit, but he's picked right up where he left off last year. I think here, let me see. Yeah, he's got a 1.94 goals against average for the season so far this year. So he's leading the league as far as that goes. He's definitely in the top. The other one, which is one of the surprise team, is Connor Hellebuyck from Winnipeg. You know, Winnipeg, I think a lot of people thought if they were going to get in, they were going to be towards the bottom. And right now they had a really great month. They've kind of cooled off a little bit, but they're still doing really well. He's sitting there with a 2.20 goals against average. So those are definitely the two big names. You know, we want to talk trade deadline later. We can save about 3 or 4 goalies there that I think have got some potential to move that are big names too, that are having good seasons. They're just not on good teams. And that's always a recipe for a trade come NHL trade deadline.
Mm. The Midnight Rider says, for the hockey novices, explain the record, the win-loss, etc.
Yeah, so you have the wins, which is 29 wins, 15 losses, and then the one is an overtime or shootout loss. So in the NHL, you get, it's all based off of them points. So if you have a win, that's 2 points. If you lose in regulation, it's zero. If you lose in either overtime or shootout, you get a point. So they put that number next because you're actually getting a point for that loss.
Hmm. See, I love the way the NHL plays out, and I love the whole shootout thing. Now back in the day, I couldn't stand it because playing Blades of Steel?
Blades of Steel, right?
I used to always lose the shootout. It was either that or was it Mario Lemieux? It was one of them games I would always lose the shootout. Always, I couldn't do it.
In NHL, the NHL games I play today, I'm still terrible at the shootout. It's just it's not how I score the goals in those games, but.
Now, I got a list. We got a list here. Top point guys.
Well, it's a little bit of a surprise for me this year, just because I wasn't. Tampa Bay's been kind of up and down too, but it's good old Nikita Kucherov, who's always been towards the top of the list. He's leading the league right now with 85 points. Nathan MacKinnon is right behind him at 84. So a couple of the names that you would expect to see there, just, you know, Kucherov and Tampa Bay's kind of, they're getting a little bit up there in age, but he's still producing at least. And then Austin Matthews for Toronto leads the team, leads the NHL with 40 goals. And we're actually, this is kind of like the All-Star break comes up next weekend, but this is where a lot of teams have the NHL does where you can get 5 days off around the All-Star break, either before or after. So it actually gives the players usually 8 to 10 days away from the game. They can't practice during the 5 days or anything like that. So some teams get that before the All-Star break, some teams get it after. So it's kind of a weird spot in the NHL schedule where there's not a ton of games going on right now. But it's good to kind of, it's a good spot to actually reflect and see, okay, where are teams at and get ready for that push before the trade deadline. And so you got Matthews at 40 goals, Sam Reinhart with Florida is right behind him at 37. So it'll be fun. I think, you know, obviously Matthews will definitely get to 50 because there's still about 30 games left. So he'll definitely hit 50, which is always the big number to get for a season. If you get 50 goals, that's one heck of a year you've had.
Now, let me get this straight. If I love hockey assists, if I touch the puck, I get an assist.
Up to two guys. So you have your goal score, you have your primary assist, and then you have the secondary assist. So a max of three guys can get a point on the play.
I love how that works. I don't know. I've always loved that because it's like I had a hand in that and I get credit for it. All right, cool. I'm with that.
That's how Gretzky made a lot of money on the assists. Not that he could still score his goals too, but he had his office behind the net just beating people left and right where he helped put a lot of guys in the Hall of Fame with that assist.
Love it. Top rookies.
Well, I remember we hit him at the beginning when I was on the first time, and that list hasn't changed. The guys that were kind of the top picks have all produced, and they're actually producing, which is, it's a rarity for the NHL this year where there isn't really a top pick right now, the top three or four that you'd be like, not too sure about them. I mean, Connor Bedard is in Chicago is doing exactly what they thought he would. He's leading the rookies with 33 points. He's been just on fire this year. Minnesota's got two really good kids. Brock Faber's at 29 points. Marco Rossi's at 28 points. They've all, you know, both of, they're kind of leading this charge to Minnesota, but there's still a couple things away where I think they could be some sellers with some of their older guys this year because just they're missing a few pieces still. And then talk about team missing a lot of pieces in Columbus is, but they've got this young kid, Adam Fantilli, who's really had some spectacular goals this year, and he's sitting at 27 points, but he's really honestly about their only bright spot right now. The rest of that team is not good.
The Midnight Rider chimed in. He got a question. He said, can we fix Ovechkin? I didn't think Ovechkin was broke. I just think he waiting to turn it on the right time. I don't see him as broke.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I think he's actually got, he's got 31 points. So he's actually tied for the lead with points with the Dylan Strom, who's having a really strong second year for the Caps. But he's only got 9 goals, which is not an OV number with 30 games left to go in the game. You know, so you start to wonder, okay, is it just age? But I've watched my share of Caps games this year. I don't think it's that. I mean, he's still playing with the same fire he always has. I think he's just missing his Backstrom. You know, like Backstrom and him clicked together. They just were, you know, it's like Curry and Gretzky, those two guys together, and they just haven't found that guy that fits with him that way. That, you know, Backstrom did a great job of feeding him, not on every single goal, obviously, that Ovi scored, but yeah, you know, I think that's a part of it. And when you don't have that movement on the power play and the Caps are missing that, you know, Ovi can sit in his office, but it's easier to defend if you don't trust any of the other parts around him. And I think I don't know what to make of the Caps. They're 6 points back right now from a playoff spot. You know, do they, and they don't really have any pieces that I've, you know, they've got maybe a couple guys that they could trade and try to, you know, get some more picks for the later, but I don't know. They haven't, you know, Anthony Mantha is probably the only name that really comes to mind where I'm like, yeah, that's somebody that, you know, hits that button for a guy that they could trade and get some stuff for. TJ Oshie is going to be an interesting guy at the deadline because he's still got a year left, but he's got some money on that deal. But he's a player that I think that guys could want, but I don't know if he can stay healthy. And I think that's the whole problem for the Caps just in general with Ovi is, what do you do? Like, I mean, honestly, Washington would never do this. They'd be stupid to do it. But the best thing to do for the team aspect might be to trade Ovi and let him go somewhere else. They're never going to do that. And I would never suggest that they should do that, because that you want to talk about people running out of seats of a brand new arena that you're trying to build in Virginia. That's going to be the way to do that. So that's never going to happen. But from a hockey standpoint, you know, there's been many of a team before that has traded that guy. But if Ovi's going to break that record, you want him to do it in a Caps uniform. And that's the only way that he can do it. I don't know how they fix this to get to a point where you're back in a tough, I mean, the Eastern Conference is just loaded. So that's not helpful either. There's a lot of really, really damn good hockey teams in the Eastern Conference. And I don't know that they've got enough talent to leapfrog like teams like the Devils, who are surprisingly sitting out of the playoffs right now too, to get into a playoff spot. Maybe the Flyers fall back, but I don't know.
I had a question right on the tip of my head. Hold on. Wait a second. Where you at? It was Ovi. Oh, since we're talking about Ovi, number one, do you think, now I'm just spitballing here, I'm not sure. Do you think that if they changed what line he was on, would that help him, motivate him? They moved, I think, what is he on, like the first line? If they changed like the third line, would that help him?
I don't think you're going to do that to a guy like Ovi. Like I said, it's not an effort issue. Like, I've never watched a game of him this year and thought, Ovi's not giving it his all. Like, I don't think you ever have to worry about that with him. It's just, I think he needs another piece. And I don't know that piece right now is on the team to get him back to where he's scoring. You know, I mean, look, and at his age, it's not like 9 goals at this point in the season is completely awful. You know, he's on pace to still probably end up getting between 15 to 20 goals, which isn't a terrible NHL season, especially when you're pushing your late 30s, you know. But, you know, you just never know when it's going to be that point. I mean, Gretzky hit that point a little bit younger where, you know, just couldn't do it anymore, you know, than some of the other guys where, you know, hell, Jaromir Jagr is still out there in Europe playing in his 50s, you know. But, you know, so I don't know. I don't think it's that. Like, if it was a motivation thing, then I would say, yeah, maybe you throw him on a third line and see what happens. But I don't. With Ovi, I've never questioned his heart, and I've never questioned his ability. I just don't know that he's got. And he's had some bad puck luck this year, too. I mean, he's hit a few more posts than what he has in years past. And, you know, where those ones would go off and in, he's having them go off and out.
The Midnight Rider chimed in. He said, heard he's been struggling to find a stick.
Yeah, he's been switching between some sticks, which is weird, you know, but NHL players are just, they're a curious bunch, you know, like when they start not doing well, they'll go from stick to stick to stick until they find one and they get hot and then they won't move. You know, we are a very superstitious bunch, hockey players. We will do a lot of weird things, and, you know, that's not that uncommon. But, you know, the sticks today are so much different than what they used to be. You know, they used to be wood. They're no longer made of wood. They're all composites of different materials. And, you know, they have this huge flex where, like, you can, if you look in slow motion at a hockey stick when they're shooting, you'll see the bend on these sticks now that they get. The bad news is that they break a lot easier too, but, you know, they're able to generate the power and the accuracy because of these, you know, the sticks that they use today. So that's not uncommon, you know, trying to find a, a stick that's going to get you back into scoring goals.
I've always heard that, and some guys like how a certain stick is made, how it's taped, and if it's not taped like this, I can't use it. So I mean, I understand. It's just like the same thing with a bat, same thing with a glove, a basketball, a football. It's like certain things they feel natural, and I guess it gotta feel natural to you.
And most of the guys do their own tape jobs, so it's, they're all particular about how they tape the stick and everything else. So most of them do their own, but the stick in and of itself, they've got to try to get. And same thing, they put the curve on the stick as to how they like it. A lot of them curve their own sticks too, but you got it well within regulation, quote unquote. But I think the last stick check anyone's ever done in the NHL is back on good old Marty McSorley for LA, and I haven't seen one done since then. So,
wow. Now you just told me something new, because I didn't know that they taped their own sticks. I thought the trainers did that.
Nope.
And they put their own bin in it.
Yep. A lot of them do. Some of them will let the trainers do it once they know, but a lot of them like to do it themselves. They get the blowtorch out themselves and will put the bend in it.
Mm. Well, hey, I just learned something new. surprise teams, good and bad.
I guess we'll start with the good, because it's always good to start with the good, right? I think Vancouver is definitely the top surprise team on the good side. They're 33-11-5, so they're sitting in first place actually overall in the league with 71 points. I think a lot of people thought Vancouver would be better with some of the kids that they've had come along, and Tyler Demko in goal. I don't think anyone thought that they'd be 33-11-5 good. They've just been on a roll. They've kept it going all year. They don't really show any signs of slowing down. They've got the good mix where they've got some kids on offense that can score. They're playing good defense, and they're getting good goaltending. And when you got those three rolling, you keep on riding it. The other team is out in Winnipeg too. They're 30-12-5. So they're sitting there at 65 points. I think Winnipeg was a team that a lot of people weren't sure if they would have enough, but they've been riding their goalie, Connor Hellebuyck. Like, they went through a stretch where they won 10 games in a row. In those 10 games, they didn't give up more than two goals in a single game. So when you're not giving up goals, it makes it a lot easier to win. So those would definitely be the two on the good side. On the surprise bad side, I'd put New Jersey. They're 24-23 right now. They're 6 points out of a playoff spot. New Jersey went to made it into playoffs last year, and they got a lot of young talent with the Hughes brothers, but they are struggling in net. They've got the lowest goals against average, or the highest goals against average, which is bad. You don't want that to be high, and the lowest save percentage, which you don't want that to be low. So they're struggling in goal, and they've had some serious injuries. And I think eventually, if they can get everybody healthy, which it sounds like shortly here after the All-Star break, they should be starting to get some guys back. I would expect them to be a team that makes a run, but I think they're going to be a team that's going to have to improve their goalie before they can make that run. And there's a few of them out there that they could pick from, and they have the cap space to be able to do it. Buffalo, I put as a surprise in the negative, just because I think a lot of people thought that this was going to be the year that Buffalo was going to finally break their curse and get into the playoffs. And they're sitting there at 22-23-4 out of the playoff picture. And they are, let's see here, I think they are 10. They're 10 points out of the playoff picture right now. So that's not looking good for them. That's a lot of teams there that you got to leapfrog. And Toronto is a weird one. They're sitting at 25-14-8, which sounds good, but they started off super hot, and they have just they've lost like five or six out of their last eight. And the Toronto media does not like that. And that it's an area where you start losing games, and those fans start turning on you. That media starts turning on it. That knife just turns a little bit more. And it can get it can be tough.
Hmm. And when the media turned, and the fans right behind it,
it's like New York. It's like the Yankees. To put it in perspective for any Yankees and Mets fan, like you see a Yankees and Mets team that starts to play badly. Like, look at what happened with the Mets last year. That's what can happen in Toronto real quick with hockey.
Hmm. Before we go to trade deadline. And, as a whole, I know we talked a little bit about the caps. I got a question for you. I've been kicking around ideas of how to spruce up the NFL Pro Bowl. Now, we got All-Star Weekend for the NHL coming up. And I think behind the NBA, the NHL All-Star festivities have to be some of the best in sports. And two-part question. Number one, what's your favorite part of the NHL All-Star weekend? And number two, have you ever been to an All-Star game?
So I've not been to an All-Star game, but when it was in Raleigh, we went to the skills competition the night before because that ticket was a lot cheaper to get my hands on. And I actually enjoyed that, I think, more than I would have actually going to the game because they rolled out the red carpet, so you got to go out. So we went outside, we waited for them, got a few autographs, then went inside and enjoyed the show. So I've been to that, but I've not been to the actual game, but I've been around it when it was in Raleigh for the 1 week and when I was still living there. I think I like what they've done with the All-Star game and that they've made it the 3-on-3. Like, so it's basically like the overtime format. So instead of it being 5-on-5, it goes down to 3-on-3. So it opens up the ice a lot more because the NHL, I mean, look, in the All-Star game, it's probably similar to the NBA. Like they don't check in the NBA, they don't check in the NHL All-Star game, just like they don't play defense in the NBA All-Star game. So admitting that, okay, we're not going to get the checking going on at 5-on-5. So let's at least open up the ice and really see some skills. So they've done it where they make it the 3-on-3, which is, it makes the teams a little bit smaller, but they do four teams. So you have a team A, team B, team C, TD, and then they'll play. And then in the semifinals and the finals this year, they're going back to four team captains and they're letting the players actually draft their teams. So they will draft their own set of teams. And I think that draft should be coming up. I think it's Thursday night with part of the skills competition. But so that'll be interesting. They did that a few years back and it was neat. I mean, the only thing, I think no one wanted to see anybody be the last guy picked, but somebody's got to be that. But so it'll be interesting with them going back to that format, how it works instead of having your conference. So, you know, you're not going to have Ovi and Crosby maybe playing together. They might still up on the same team, but well, I don't even think Ovi's in it this year because I don't think they put him on there if I remember correctly. I think my favorite skills competition, I still am a junkie for the accuracy shot, which is just they put the four little targets up in the corners and you see if anyone can go 4-for-4, you know, like the old Ray Bourque days. I mean, that he was a machine at going 4-for-4, but that's still my favorite one.
Man, see, it's been so long since I watched the NHL All-Star game, even the skills competition. It's just, I think last one I watched, I think it was a time of with the puck up and down the ice. And I think I was young when I watched that. And I said, yeah, if I ever learn how to skate, I don't know if I ever be that fast.
They've gotten kind of crazy the last couple of years, like, because I think that, you know, they're trying to draw more people in. So instead of just doing the traditional skills competition, which was always fastest skater, hardest shot, and then the accuracy, and then they would do some one-on-ones with the goalies and stuff like that to get them involved. They've kind of done some, you know, like last year, I think they were somewhere and they're like doing this golf thing, but they're golfing with hockey sticks or something weird like that. And I'm sure they're going to try that again this year in Toronto. So that kind of stuff, I'm kind of been like, eh, it's not for me. But, you know, I get you're same thing. You know, you're trying to draw in new fans. So if it's a gimmick and it draws in new fans, you know, I'm not going to complain too much about it, because I just, the more people that get in hockey, it's great.
Now, one more question, then we'll go to it, because I thought about this and I would love to hear what you have to say. Favorite hockey movie of all time?
Well, I classify them in two. Like if you go hockey comedy, there's only one choice. That's Slapshot. It's Slapshot all day long. That's the best comedy movie. Now, if you're talking about my favorite overall hockey movie, it's Miracle. That's the movie I usually, you know, that's the one from the 1980 U.S. hockey team. I usually on February 28th every year, I either watch Miracle or I've got the video from the actual game. I usually flip-flop those. But when I watch Miracle, the kids always laugh at me because I can basically quote most of some of that movie as I'm watching it. So, but it's definitely a Miracle. I love the story. I think Herb Brooks, Kurt Russell that played Herb Brooks in that movie. I think he did an amazing job of getting his little nuances down. Like if I didn't know any better, I would have thought it was Herb Brooks. So I think that they did a really good job with that movie. But Slapshot comedy wise, I mean, nothing beats the Hanson brothers and putting on the foil.
I remember, Sports Illustrated did a article on that, and he did an article on the whole show, had everybody come back, and I learned some things. You get you some golf gloves, make them real tacky around the knuckles, and put them on a radiator. It makes it hard.
Yep. There's all kinds of tricks some guys did, especially in the 70s and 80s. You know, Goon's another good funny hockey movie too. But that Goon is a really good picture too of what minor league hockey used to be like in the 70s and 80s. That is not, you know, unless you're very rarely were you the upper end guys and you didn't stay there that long. But there's some guys that make careers just out of fighting in minor league hockey, because that's what puts butts in seats in minor league hockey is the fights. So those guys could make a decent little career, but man. They took a beating.
Man. Now, get to the question. Trade deadline. Who you think going where? What moves you think need to be made? And are one of the bottom dweller teams holding on to somebody that can help another team get over the hump?
Yeah, so trade deadline's March 8th, so we're getting close. So after All-Star weekend, now then you got 3 weeks. And I think there's a lot of teams right now that aren't certain if they're going to be buyers or sellers. You got a team like Calgary who's sitting 5, 6, 7 points out. You got the Islanders sitting 6 points out. The Devils sitting 6 points out. The Caps sitting 6 points out. If any one of those teams, and the Penguins, that's another team that, what do you do with Sidney? You know, you got Sidney Crosby on a team. You can't fold in the towel, but, you know, it's weird how the Pens and Caps are so similar in that sense of you got these amazing superstar first ballot Hall of Fame guys, but what do you do with your team this year that is 6, 8 points out of the playoffs? Do you try to make a run to get in and see what happens, or do you try to, you know, like the Penguins, I've heard a little rumor lately of Jake Gensel, you know, possibly being thrown out there as a possible trade suspect. I don't see them doing that because I think he's their future moving on from Crosby, but you never know. Calgary is a team that's got a lot of talented players that if they decide that they want to move some guys, they could do that. They've got Elias Lindholm, which is a really good center. They got Noah Hanifin and Chris Tanev, which are two really good defensemen that I definitely could see teams wanting, especially a New Jersey that might be looking for some help. The Rangers too, who started off well, I think they could use another score. You got Vegas, who I think could use another score as well. And Colorado is never afraid to add more scoring. Their goalie, Jacob Markstrom, is a really good goalie. He's got a no movement clause though, so he's got to want to move out of Calgary. I'm sure for the right guy, he would. Anaheim's got a center, Adam Henrique, Frank Vetrano. Those are two guys that could move. Their goalie too, Josh Gibson, is a guy that I could possibly see them moving. They talked about trading one of their younger kids, and by younger, I mean he'd be a restricted free agent next year, so they've got some control with him in Trevor Zegras, but I'd be surprised if they move him, but that's a name that he's been moving, you know, talked about. San Jose, Anthony DeClaire, and Mark, that's the bottom feeder of all bottom feeders right now, San Jose, but they really don't have a lot of players that I think people would want. Maybe Anthony DeClaire, because he's been a cup winner, and Mike Hoffman, they've got some experience, but I don't know. The key's going to be the goalies. I think Jake Allen is another one in Montreal that could go. Yeah. Nashville just recently has thrown Saros' name out there, who's one of the top 10 goalies in the league, but these guys are all going to demand premium prices, and I just don't know what teams are going to be willing to move. I think you always got to wait to see that first trade kind of sets what the market's going to be for some of these, you know, unrestricted free agent guys. Those are the easier ones to move at the trade deadline for usually a pick or two. Then some of these other guys that have a year or two left on their contract, but it's going to be interesting. You know, Vladimir Tarasenko in Ottawa is another name who's, you know, he's got some goals, but it hasn't worked out well for him in Ottawa. I bet he's regretting walking away from the deal he had with Carolina, and then he fired his agent, because I think he'd be feeling a lot better if he was on Carolina right now. But I don't know, it's going to be an interesting trade deadline. You know, Marc-Andre Fleury, the old Penguins goalie, you know, he's got a full no trade clause too, but Minnesota's kind of out of it right now, but somebody would take a real chance on him to win a cup, you know, if they haven't. I can think of, you know, Carolina as a team that could definitely use a goalie. New Jersey is a team that could definitely use a goalie if they really want to make a deep run. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun March 8th for sure.
Now, this is way too early because we don't know who's in the playoffs. But if you had to choose your favorite to win the cup this year, who would it be?
If I can only pick one, I'm probably right now still going to stick with the defending champs, the Vegas Knights. And that's not my favorite team, but I think the East is so tough this year. Whatever eight teams make it, they're going to have to beat the hell out of each other just to get to the finals. And I think the West, you know, Vancouver and Winnipeg are some teams in the West that are up and coming, and who knows what's going to happen with Edmonton. I still just don't trust Edmonton. It's like, until I see Edmonton win a round or two in the playoffs, I just don't trust them in the playoffs until that actually happens. Maybe they finally got everything in place, but you know, Vegas, they're not a thrillsy team. They don't have like that big name superstar, but they've got a lot of really, really good players, and they got a really good defense, and they have a really good goalie. And they proved last year that that can work. And, you know, until somebody takes them out, or less, you know, barring injuries or something like that, I still would put a lot of money on Vegas, because I think whoever comes out of the West is going to be in a lot better shape health-wise than whoever comes out of the East.
Duval Paul checking in the comment section. Cats are going to make an all-in move before the deadline.
I think so. I could see them making a move for, they could use another score. I mean, they're set. Maybe even another fifth or sixth D. I mean, they're set with goalie. You know, Bob's been great again this year. That's another one of those teams, and especially with Paul Maurice as their head coach, that's a team you don't want to face in the playoffs, because they are a heavy team. They will pound you. They will hit you hard. That works well in the playoffs when you get into games 4, 5, and 6 of playing the same team, when they just know that they are going to be bringing the lumber, so to speak, and not afraid to hit you. They add a couple more guys to go with their skill guys, you know, to go with the Tkachuks and stuff on that team. That they're definitely a team in the East. I mean, there's four teams, I think, in the East that you could say, any one of those four teams, you can make a strong argument for winning it. Carolina's one, Florida's one, Boston's the other, and I still would keep the Rangers in there, even though they're kind of struggling a bit, and their Vezina Trophy winning goalie right now is actually struggling for this year in Shesterkin. But I still trust those four teams to be there. But like I said, they've all got to go through each other, and that's where it's going to be brutal for them.
The Midnight Rider says, explain the term heavy for us.
So heavy, you know, like by playing heavy, it's a team that they're a very physical team to play against. So they use their body weight. They usually, you know, so they check hard. You know, there's two, usually teams play it one a couple ways. You got your finesse teams that try to use speed and agility to create openings to then create shots. You got your teams that just play heavy, and basically they're just going to try to beat the snot out of you, game in and game out, and just physically dominate you and tire you out to then take you out and win. So any team that plays heavy is a team that likes to just hit hard, and they use, you know, they usually have some bigger boys on the team that aren't afraid to use that weight. Not that they're slow either, because the game has changed so much, where it used to be, you talked about Blades of Steel, remember, you had the skinny guy that could just skate up and down the ice, but you know, if you flicked a finger at him, he'd go down, and then you had that middle guy, and then you had the big tough fat guy that, you know, you could just pound everybody. Well, it's not really like that anymore in the NHL. Some of these guys can be 6'5" and 250 and still fly up and down the ice, but they know how to throw the shoulder into somebody and make them feel it.
Here's a question, old school question. I've heard people talk about Gretzky being the greatest, right? But if you had to choose, in your opinion, I like I told you, I'm a goalie fan. I love my goalies. Who? I don't think I asked you this the last time. Greatest goalie of all time.
The easy answer would probably be Martin Brodeur, because you know that the stats don't lie of what he was able to do. My personal favorite goalie of all time is Grant Fuhr. I think he's also one of the most underrated goalies of all time, because he played in an open era where scoring was a lot more available. He played in front of that Edmonton Oilers team, which, yes, they were great offensively. They were never, you know, other than the Steve Smiths and the Marty McSorleys, but still, even then, they weren't the greatest defensively. And he would make some amazing saves that were just mind blowing at times, especially for that era that he played in. But you still can't argue with Brodeur and with Waugh, Patty Waugh, who just now got named as the Islanders head coach, which is an interesting move there too. But, you know, you can't argue with any one of those three, you know, those two guys. But my personal favorite was Grant Fuhr, just because, you know, I was an 80s to 84 junkie with the Edmonton Oilers. So I loved watching him play.
See, when you say Patrick Waugh, that's Patrick Waugh, Olaf Kozik. Those two, they live right here. They got special places in my heart.
My years from DC, I loved watching Ole the goalie play. He's probably one of my favorite goalies to watch play, just because I liked the way that he played goal. You know, he and same thing too. He was on some stinker teams there towards the end of his Caps years, but that those years with Peter Bondra and Gardner and stuff, like Ole the goalie was legit. And I did, and he's always been a good guy too. I like the ones that are good guys too. And not that Brodeur are bad guys, but you know, Grant Fuhr went through his hardships getting into the league and, you know, being a player of color. It wasn't easy, especially back then, to then dominate and like he did in goal. I just always have found him to be an underrated goaltender as far as how he's looked upon. And a lot of it's just because of the other talent that was on that Edmonton team, which I get, but that kid could play. He was something. He was just, I love Grant Fuhr. There I go again. I'm rambling. I'm sorry.
Well, we joined by, and it's no problem rambling, because this has been a learning experience, because I don't really get to talk hockey at all. So I kind of got out of it because I had nobody to talk to. Now I got somebody to talk to. So don't be surprised if I'm asking a bunch of questions lately.
Absolutely.
It's coming.
Not a problem.
Now, one thing I love to do is I love to, on a day when I don't have anything to do and it's a hockey game on, you know, I love to sit around and watch a good hockey game. So be prepared for those questions. But we're joined by none other than the Midnight Rider.
There he is.
You know, a little late.
Yeah, I think right. this week I'm on a minutes restriction. I'm on load management this week or something.
Look, hey, put it this way. Was left in good hands.
Oh, of course.
Matt took care of everything. Look. We got no beefs. We got no qualms, because this right here, like, I'm kind of sort of geek, but I'm also sad because the Caps not doing well. When the Caps don't do well, it seems like DC is just, it's dark during this time of year. It's like the sun doesn't shine, the wind is colder, but when the Caps are winning, it's like it's springtime and winter. People walking around with no jackets on, you know, you seeing a sea of red jerseys and. It's like now we don't even get that right now, but.
Well, the Caps have carried the sports really for DC area the last few years, right? I mean, the Nats had their run, but you could count on the Caps to usually be there, and you know that they would, and yeah, this is the first year where they didn't, you know, where the sellout streak came to an end earlier this year, you know? Right. So it's hard, you know, when it always goes to show, like, people got on Carolina for the years when they weren't drawn, but you know, they went until they hired Rod Brendamore, so head coach, they went 8 years without making the playoffs. And, you know, you don't make the playoffs, you start losing fans. And I think the Caps are unfortunate. And it'll be interesting to see too, if more, because, you know, I think the Caps did a really good job the last few years of having less Flyers and less Pens fans get into the building on those games. It'll be interesting to see if that creeps back in, because DC is such a melting pot area. As tickets become more and more available, I think unfortunately they're going to see maybe some of that nice home ice advantage that they had, you know, get lost along the way too. And especially when they move to Virginia, that's going to be the interesting part to me, because, you know, the suburbs of Virginia have a lot of different fan bases out there from guys that have moved from everywhere. It's going to be interesting to see. I hope it doesn't happen to them. Like, you know, I think of Vegas and the Raiders and how they've lost their home field advantage, and there's other teams in the NHL that have that problem too, where guys just come in to their, you know, Florida has to happen all the time down there with Boston and stuff like that. It's going to be interesting to see how that changes with the Caps.
I think the key for the Caps is going to be filling the product. As long as they can be competitive, be in the hunt, be contenders, I think that notion of going to Virginia, it sounds good right now that, oh, they're going to Virginia, I'm never going to a game. But let this team be in the midst of it. fighting for a cup again, getting in the playoffs. And I think those same people that said they weren't going to Virginia, they're going to find their way to Virginia. I think the building and the setup alone is going to make this place so special that you're going to wonder why you aren't coming to a game. Like, it's going to change your mind, your whole outlook on the facility, because it's going to be so dynamic. You're talking about a state-of-the-art facility, basically where you have the training, the games, you have everything the team needs in this one plaza, and you want to have restaurants and food. So yeah, you're going to have a whole bunch of stuff in that area.
Time out. 30 seconds. Time out. Hold on. You said training. So what's going to happen to the Iceplex down on Wilson Boulevard? Well, right off of Wilson Boulevard.
The Caps are staying in theirs. But when I mean training, I kind of lumped the Wizards into that conversation. So I apologize. Okay. Because I think the Wizards will have their all-in-one facility there. I think the Caps will still do the Wilson Boulevard and play their games on other things. That's not going to be too far apart anyway.
No, because they just built that too just a couple years ago, didn't they?
Yeah.
That's a pretty nice facility.
What is it called now?
Oh, I have no idea.
It used to be called Kettler.
That's what I always
know. I think it's MedStar.
Yeah, probably somebody. I think it's MedStar. Right, I'm sure.
But now you guys were talking.
Everything's MedStar right about now.
Y'all were talking earlier, and I just was listening to the Caps talk. And the two things that bother me about the Caps, one is you can't get anything good out of Konecso. Kuzi, he's still one of the, he's probably, if we just go off skill alone, or you play like an NHL game, based on his skill, he's probably like a 95. But his problem is his effort. His effort level is horrible. Also, for the Caps, I like the fact that Charlie Lindgren has kind of taken the goalie job away from Darcy Kemper. He's been playing some solid hockey. He's now the guy that gets the majority of the week in goal. And then once the back-to-back, that's when Kemper comes in. And another problem for the Caps is they can't score. So I think they got to find some way, because they're only winning the games they win. I heard this earlier. Like, they can win 3-2. They can win 4-2. But it's got to be a fight. You don't see them winning that game 4-0 or 5-0. And it's because they don't have the explosiveness. And they've got to figure out somebody or something to give up to get some more explosiveness on this team. And I think that's going to be the key to – that's going to tell you a whole lot about what they think about their futures, who they bring in at the trade deadline. And I know you guys talked about that.
Yeah, I mean, because you talk about Kuzi, he's sitting at 17 points and he's a minus 11 for hockey terms, plus minus. If you're on the ice when you score an even strength goal, it's plus one. If you're on the ice when your team scores against you, it's minus one. So that means that he's been on the ice even strength, where the other team has scored 11 more times than the Caps have scored when he's on it. So that's never a good number. I don't know what to do with Kuzi. He's another one of those where you just – it's not quite clicking. And you got some young kids on that team, you know, like Connor McMichael and stuff, who I like. He just needs, a little bit more seasoning. And maybe you've got a good possible second, third line center there. But I don't know, you know, long term, you know, Carlson has been fine on D. He's probably still your guys' best D, I think. But, you know, but I the problem is I just don't, you know, I think Matra at what he's sitting at 23 points and a plus six. I think he's a player that I could see him getting moved for something.
Right.
You brought up the goalie situation, and I like him. I think Lindgren's done well for them. I don't, you know, is he their future though? I mean, he's kind of been around a few years already. You know, and that's another position too, where I just don't know. I don't know the Caps have their goalie of the future. Is, I don't think the goalie of their future is on this team right now.
They have a kid down at Hershey that's supposed to be pretty decent. They brought up when Kemper was hurt, I think, he was up for a couple games.
So yeah.
Kemper wasn't down long. But, I mean, you got to look at, if you look around the landscape of hockey, there's a lot of ex-Caps goalies playing on other teams. So if there's one place that I think they can get it right, it's goalie.
Probably. They've always done well with goalies. But talk about Hershey, they just re-signed their deal with Hershey, too, for six more years. So that's a solid partnership that's last. I mean, I think I couldn't imagine Hershey ever not being with the Caps. It's, they've been with them for so long. So I was happy to see that today, that they announced that partnership.
Go ahead.
Well, you know why. You know why they do well at goalie, right?
Is Ole their goalie coach still? I can't remember. He was, wasn't he? Yes, okay.
I know he was, but I know he did because he was the one that that nurtured. There wasn't no coaching. There wasn't no training. He nurtured Braden Holtby. He turned him into Holt Beast, and I don't understand what went wrong. I thought he was going to be the guy for the next 10 years.
I think he got hurt, and he just, you know, and he's a tall guy, and he just never recovered from that. And you know, that's the thing with goalies. It's like, especially if they get the wrong injury in the wrong spot with how much their bodies have to flex and bend, it's, you know, Freddie Anderson in Carolina, you know, he kind of is another guy. Like, he just cannot stay healthy. Like, he could be, he's really good when he plays. He just never plays. And that's why I think Carolina is another one of those teams that's got to probably make a move at goalie. They've got a young kid from Russia. And that I just call PK because I can't pronounce his last name because it's one of those. But he's a fiery kid. He's kind of got a little bit of Hasek in him, which I love because, you know, I love those type of goalies that, I mean, he kind of seems like he's a guy hits him and he's not afraid to push back, which I love from seeing from a goalie, being an ex-goalie myself. But there's a few guys, and Holtby was like that too. He got hurt and then he never seemed to recover from that.
My last question for Matt is, what's the ejection total up to?
So we got up to, you know, that last game, we got to six because I had first period, 2 minutes left, I had a fight with a third man in. So a third man is a guy that jumps in the fight. So those two got what they deserved. I mean, there was nothing I could do on it. They just started throwing punches before I could even get in there on them. So we're up to six now. But the three that got it deserved it by deciding to get stupid and throw punches. So what are you going to do?
Well, that's a good question. What are you going to do?
Wait for the game to be over.
Do you just let them go at it? Or it's just like...
Yes, because I learned, especially if it's a fight in beer league, you know, like, you know, if these two guys at 11 o'clock at night want to be morons and start throwing punches, you know, I got to get up and go to work the next morning. I'll let them get, and it don't take a lot usually for them to get tired. So then you like for them to get tired, then you split them up and go there. With the kids, you try to make sure that nobody's getting, if they're both throwing punches, you wait for your partner because you never want to go in solo because that's how you end up getting hit. You wait for your partner, you try to both grab somebody. If somebody ends up on top of somebody, you're trying to get there to make sure that they're not just, you know, that they're not doing something completely stupid to the kid that they're on top of. So you try to make sure that nobody's got a complete unfair advantage. But if they're just two guys throwing, let them throw until they tire themselves out.
Mm. Solid strategy.
I learned so much from hockey. I learned how to fight from hockey, how to grab somebody, pull their shirt over their head and just uppercut all day long. I learned that from hockey.
There's a couple guys that do this really good thing where they grab the guy's jersey and then they just use that hand and just keep punching the dude in the face while they got the hold of their jersey. They can get, you can get in five or six good shots that way if you get it just right.
Well, we got some news of the day to run down real quick. And this is heavy news coming out. Midnight Rider, you want to take that away? I know that's your thing.
Well, I mean, the first big news of the day came around, I guess, 1-2 o'clock when Ben Johnson decided to tell or to inform the Seattle Seahawks and the Washington Commanders that he was no longer interested in their head coaching position. Speculation has been abroad. One's been questions about how much money, how long of a deal. But the bad thing was he didn't let the Commanders know until they were already in flight going to Detroit. The good thing for them was they are still interviewing Aaron Glenn, which is probably happening now or has already happened. So it's not an all for naught trip. They get something out of it, but I think it changes the landscape because I think so many people had Ben Johnson in Sharpie to Washington. And I think a lot of us, some people were just like, let's wait and see, because I think they're going to make a right decision. And I think him stepping out actually did them a favor because you don't want a guy that's halfway in. You know what I'm saying? And that probably doesn't sound right, but you know what I mean. I'll add the obligatory pause into that. But you want somebody to be a leader of the team and a leader of men. And his actions today, I mean, it felt like a kid calling in, like having his mom call in saying he can't come to school, or if it's dating, it's he called and told him it's me, it's not you. Just all that stupid stuff. It was just very immature, and I think this is going to hurt him in the long run, because this is the second time he's kind of just backed out of the process while he's been in the process, and it just doesn't make sense right now. He could end up getting, what's your boy, the super genius, Josh McDaniels. He could possibly have some effects of that.
And yeah, that's what Duval Paul said, better than what McDaniels did to Indy.
True, very true. Take the job and then quit the next day.
Yeah, I mean, that report out there is correct that he wanted $15 million a year. Like, it's funny, like I was talking to my son about earlier when we saw that news. It's like, you know, like, and then we started looking up coaches, and it's like, Andy Reid's only making $12 million a year. Like, and you haven't coached a game in this league, and you think you're going to get $15 million a year? Like, if that report's correct, then I get why teams were maybe a little shy on hiring a guy, as good as he may end up being. But $15 million on a guy that's not coached a game in the NFL without a Super Bowl ring seems to be a bit high for me.
I agree. Totally agree. And I'm about as frugal as they come, and I damn sure agree.
Yeah, you'd give them incentives for every win in this contract. You'd have paid them four.
It's not an incentive for every win. It's not. It's an incentive if we have a quarterback that throws for 3,500, 4,000, and 5,000. It's tiers to the incentive. It's all incentive-based.
Okay.
Everything's incentive-based. And Duval Paul says he wants $15 million a year. Hey, I'm right there with you. Look, I'll take 10 as a coordinator.
Settle for 10?
I'll settle for 10. And I'll look, special
team. You know what kind of coordinator you got to be for 10? You got to be the head coach. You can't be a coordinator for 10. news, this is still in the early parts. I've heard breaking news. I've heard allegedly that the Orioles are being sold for $1.75 billion. I haven't seen it on ESPN yet, so I'm going to still stick with allegedly for right now. Say it again.
I'm getting ready to send it to you.
Okay, yeah, cool. I just wanted confirmation before I went on. That's why I was trying to say allegedly in speculation. But we've got definite info, then that's fine. Let's go ahead and run with it. Because the parameters then become, how does this affect the Nationals? How does this affect TV deals? How does this affect the Nationals being sold? So this is where we get to the next piece of the puzzle, because Washington has to be very mindful of what's going on in this situation. Like, does the Bud Selig death deal get grandfathered into this deal and the O still keep control? Are these reasonable businessmen that will allow you to either buy the rights out from them so you can have your own communication program or your own thing, or you build a collaborative network? These are all things that may come into play. I think that place to watch is Monumental and the Monumental Sports Network, because Ted wants something like a local platform where he can bring all the sports together and kind of have like almost like a home team sports back in the day type of thing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's what you mean?
Yeah.
You mean home team sports?
Yeah.
Where you can watch everything all at once?
Okay, yes.
Damn, that would be a great idea.
It would be a neat idea for DC. They should do something like that.
I mean, Madison isn't bad. It's just Madison is limited right to what is being presented to. And I would love for the Nats to get their own rights. Baltimore have their own rights. And the Nats, along with this Monumental thing, they do the same thing. They do a stream service. And they stream games for, was it $12.99 a month or $7.99 a month? I'm telling you right now, they can take my credit card now. Just let me know how much I got to pay. Tell me where I got to watch it. And I will stream every Nationals game all season long. KZ, you call me, I'm watching the Nats. Just know. Just know.
I think my real hope for Baltimore is, you know, because they, the, the Angelos family, so we're talking about with all these young, really good players that they have, that, well, once they're done, they're gone. Like, maybe this new ownership group will be willing on spending some money on these guys and getting them signed up, because that Baltimore team could be scary good if they bring some of these guys back. And I really hope for the city of Baltimore, because I think baseball is better when Baltimore is good. You know, when Camden Yards is full and rocking, that's good for baseball. So I hope, you know, I remember the days when I was there and, you know, going to see Cleveland play like that. Those were fun games to go to, you know, and they got that back a little bit this year. And I hope that stays.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think they're good luck for them. Speaking of your topic about the paying, is all their guys still in their arbitration years. So they're not having to pony up for anybody for at least another 2 to 3 years. And that's the good part of it, because most of this will be handled naturally through the arbitration process until these guys get to year six. The problem I think they're going to have is they have so many young bats and position players that you can only play four guys in the infield and three guys in the outfield. So you're going to have to start figuring out a tier system of who's most important and who's somebody you can be willing to give up. Because I still think they need a starter.
Yeah, they could use another arm.
And they might need a closer, because I know their closer towards the end of last season got hurt. And I don't know if it's Tommy John or not. I don't remember offhand. But that's another situation where you got to replace somebody. And maybe they have it in-house because they keep young arms. But still, that's just another situation where they got to figure it out and make it work.
Now, you said something about the deal. And if they're – we don't know nothing about them. We just know that it's an equity firm, I believe it said. A private equity billionaires – David Rubenstein and Mike Arrighetti.
I think Rubenstein is a name you got to watch out for, because I think, and this is speculation on my part, I thought I remember seeing an article that Rubenstein had some connection to Ted. And if that's the case, then maybe Ted either works out a deal through the back channels, you know, where they talk about it and they work out a deal that once Ted buys the Nats, then the rights go back or whatever they can do through a back channel. So there's hope for DC to get their sports back. And trust me, I've tried every variable and every option, because it just makes more sense now that we're 20 years beyond the point of the Nats coming into existence. Where they shouldn't be worried about Baltimore, because Baltimore has its own thing.
Right.
Agree.
This is off of ESPN. The transaction reportedly values the Orioles at $1.725 billion. Rubenstein, a Baltimore native had previously shown interest in buying the Washington Nationals. He and the New York-based Arrighetti, I hope I'm saying that right, are both founders of private equity firms, the Carlyle Group and Ares Management Corp, respectively. MLB still must approve the sale. Owners are scheduled to meet next week in Orlando. John P. Angelos has been their team's chair and managing partner since 2020, as his father, Peter, suffers from dementia. The Orioles recently finalized a deal with Maryland Stadium Authority to remain in Camden Yards for the next 15 years, with a path to expand the commitment to 30 years. If they leave Camden Yards, can you imagine the riot that would happen?
Yes.
They're not, though, because they've taken care of the place. And the Baltimore Stadium Committee, they've already put like a couple hundred million to the side for this, to revamp it a little bit. So, plus Camden Yards is the model that every stadium pretty much is built off of now. It's the template. So if you're going to build a stadium, you're going to build it off of either Camden or PNC. So that's where you're operating off of right now.
Only thing that I hope that they do in Baltimore is bring back the Baltimore Sports Museum as a brick and mortar building again. Because that in Camden was absolutely beautiful. And it's COVID really kind of did it in, because that's when you couldn't go anywhere. But I hope they bring that back as a brick and mortar building and expand it, because you got the original Colts, the second version of the Colts, you got all the Orioles teams, the Ravens teams, You got a lot of stuff that's Baltimore sports to go in there. Just my thoughts.
Then real quick, on the football side, coordinator-wise, I know Arthur Smith was hired today by Pittsburgh, which is going to be interesting. But he does fit their MO because he does like to run the football. Too bad he doesn't like running the football with Bijan Robinson,
right?
The best running back in the division. But hey, why not give Tyson Allgeier a bunch of carries and let him waste away? But that's neither here nor there. I'm not bitter about it. I didn't have Bijan on the team, but yeah. And there was one more. Oh, Kellen Moore goes to Philly. Who am I missing? Matt, am I missing any other coordinators?
Cleveland hired a guy, but I can't remember.
Oh, Ken Dorsey. Yep. Cleveland hired Ken Dorsey. And then I think that's
He get a job.
He had a job at Buffalo.
Yeah, and he lost his job because he couldn't. You had.
Ho, ho, ho.
Okay.
They were, when he got fired, they were in the top five of offense.
And it's not like. Okay.
Go ahead.
Don't lie. I can't say anything.
I felt like that was a personality thing. I think him and McDermott clashed. And it doesn't help that he had the tantrum the year before. Like, all that to me is signs. And I think his act just grew, just rubbed people the wrong way. Honestly, I think that's exactly what it was.
And Duval Paul says, if you're from Baltimore and you got billions, what else are you going to buy? You're not buying the Ravens. You might as well buy the Orioles. Well, you could buy some other things, you know. And then once you buy that, hey.
You can grab some crab cakes.
Tell the competition. Yes. Yeah.
Buy the whole harbor area, right? Buy the aquarium, maybe.
Buy the block.
What's up, Phil's point? That's all I got for you, baby.
It's been a while since I've been at Phil's Point, so. The boss BJ just chimed in. Oh, where's it at? He bought a block, dummy. That's what you do. You bought a block. Oh, man, them Baltimore dudes, man. They are hilarious. Speaking of which, I seen a TikTok. Speaking of Baltimore, and dude, you know, they did the I'm from Baltimore and da-da-da-da-da. The right. First one he did, he said, I'm from Baltimore. Of course we go to Mo Diamond Mall just to fight. And he got off the train and he put his hands up and I was like, yo, that is true. True story. True story. They were doing some construction at Mo Diamond Station. It's right outside the mall. So I had to go down into the metro station and do the elevator pit because they were trying to repair the elevator pit. So I had to inspect that and do some work in it. And I'm sitting there waiting for the guy to come up and get me to take me down there where I had to go. And all of a sudden I hear, yo, what you trying to do? What you trying to do? What y'all doing? What are we doing here? Dudes just jump out. All you see is everybody start throwing hands. I was like, okay. Then the girlfriends get out. Y'all need to get in the car. We need to leave now. And everybody just starts scattering. I'm like, y'all came all the way up here to the metro station just to fight? Jeez. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Yep. If that's what y'all want to do, that's Baltimore for you, baby. That was probably the truest thing I've ever seen about Baltimore because I've seen it in my own eyes. Gotta love it. Man, it's time to wrap that thing up. So, final thoughts, gentlemen, before we leave.
At first I want to just thank Matt because I knew I may not be here. So we talked about it. I thought we had him for last week. He was up for this week. So I appreciate you stepping in because I knew with our schedule at work, the end of the month is like the worst week. It's like from the 30th or the 29th to like the 4th are the worst parts of my week. So I definitely appreciate you stepping in. I listened the whole time, so I knew you was giving information out, dropping jewels on them. So, and then KG was asking great questions, man. You know, so we appreciate you, man.
The boss says thank you as well, Matt.
Absolutely. It's a good time. And I'm always willing to jump in on, especially talking hockey. I know I get a little into it, I know. So
no, that's what we need. Because you have that piece that we all missing. Like, I have I probably got like a C level. Like, I'm a 76 on Madden when it comes to my hockey knowledge. You know what I'm saying? You know, every now and then I can get up to an 80, but I'm about a 76. You know what I'm saying? But you like a 95. So, I mean, it's a whole different rating system, you know?
Yeah, I'm that low guy on the totem pole that, you know, after you do a franchise the first year, he not there no more. So I'm the 49. I'm the 49. You know, I can be worked with if you want to, you know, spend a little money, but, you know, I can be worked with.
But no, I think that's what we're here for, man. And I think next week we got JoJo. That's going to be an interesting show.
Instead of Joe the Fan, we're going to call that JoJo the Fan.
You can do whatever you want to do, man. She's gonna be a pistol. She called me yesterday during the games and she was fired up about something. So we just gotta keep her on track. But she's gonna put on the show for sure.
And thank you, V. Awesome. Everybody did do a good job, but gentlemen,
we
got to run on about this thing. You got anything else, Matt?
Nope. I appreciate the time, guys. It was a blast as always. So thank you.
And I'll say this before we go. Your chair is always open. Whenever you want to join, hey, hit the chat and say, hey, shoot me a link. I got something. All right, cool.
You got it.
You know, we always can slide over a little bit on the table and make a little room. Just
with
the same thing go for you.
The NHL trade deadline.
It is March 8th.
Is that a Tuesday or a Thursday?
I think it's a Tuesday because they usually like Tuesdays for some reason, if I remember correctly.
Well, if it's a Tuesday, like, you can go ahead and pencil that in because we're going to need something.
Oh, maybe it's a Friday this year. Friday, March 8th. Yeah. So we could do that Tuesday the 12th, maybe.
Yeah.
That could be good. See who the hell lands where.
Oh, all right, that's going to be good because on February 8th, which is the NBA trade deadline, don't forget we got Perry coming back talking NBA trade deadline next Thursday.
Yes,
we got it lined up. I think I'm gonna have to
So then I gotta figure out the date for it. But since we got a hockey ref, I got a high school football ref that I might have to pull out of the bullpen. My old college roommate. He actually made me miss the first game at FedEx because he decided to get married that day. I've never looked at it. Yo, I bring it up. I used to bring it up every time I saw him. So, yeah. So we got that, and then maybe if we can round up Duval Paul, we might have to do something with him in the coming weeks as well. So we got some stuff lined up, baby.
Stay tuned to the group. I got an idea. I just got hit with an idea. So stay tuned to the group because after the Super Bowl, that'd be our last big bonanza. So just stay tuned for that. I got an idea. But, gentlemen, we got to get out of here. For Matt, the Midnight Rider, I'm the big guy, KG. We don't do no overtime, y'all. We are out of here.
We did some overtime.